Hi, welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? I'm your host, Owen Benjamin, and today's episode is all about love, all about relationships. Let's take a little breather from a lot of the craziness that's going on in the world, the epic clash between order and chaos. No, let's go back to the roots of why I originally got into comedy and what I think I actually know a lot about and what I felt was threatened by the SJW indoor cat authoritarian censorship stance that men and women are the same. And if you say otherwise, you're full of hate. I can't live that way, ladies and gentlemen, because my whole career is based around men and women being different. So I briefly touched on some stuff last episode about relationship advice, and I got a surprising amount of emails just from that little section of the podcast. So I'm going to dedicate a whole one to that. You notice me wearing this sweet hat? This is my Feed the Bear hat. I'm giving these out to all my Patreons that have pledged more than 20 bucks a month, just as a thank you, because sometimes I feel like it's unfair that some people give me more than others. Although, I would have no problem doing that, but I know some people, I don't know, I'm rambling. And also the people that have donated on the Feed the Bear Patreon. And then once I get more of these hats, I'll go back and send them to everybody, every single person that has donated to me for my next hour special on Huge Pianist. I would just give them to everybody, but they're like almost 10 bucks a piece just to make. And I only ordered 200 of them. And I have to bring a bunch to United Kingdom and Ireland on tour. So I'm gonna do a post on Patreon for those people that just out of the goodness of their heart pledged some money to help out the Big Bear and his dreams. And so I'll if you give me your address, I'll send you a free hat. And then once I get more, I can do more. But right now I don't have that many. But it's pretty snazzy. Amy designed it, and we got it all stitched up. What did I want to talk about? Oh, Texas was a blast. Thank you for coming out to my shows in Texas. I just did Dallas, and I'm about to do Plano, Texas. I had a really good time. Texas people are proud people and fun people. I always like being in Texas because they have the Texas flag everywhere, which is just one star. It's the Texas flag. And that kind of sets a tone for the federal government and a lot of people that are basically saying, we already have our own flag. If you have any issues with us, like, we're ready to go. It's almost like being in a bad relationship. Like, Texas is like that hot chick with like that guy that sucks, or the other way around, like that really good guy with like this chick that sucks. And it's like, yeah, have your nonsense. It's kind of like that hot, okay, let's go with the hot chick with the guy that sucks, where if he like is just yelling at her and he won't get a job or whatever, and she's just banging hot, and she's just like, yeah, like, I already have another apartment ready to go. If you at any point want to do some shit, I'm out. And I like that tone. It's in this time of authoritarian movements and censorship, I think states' rights are important and state identity is important. Because I think that's one of the most important things about the United States. It's we unite as states because we allow the states to express themselves as states. Like, what Vermont wants is going to be different than what Texas wants, and different from what Washington wants and Missouri wants and North Dakota and Alaska and Hawaii. These places are all so different with such different histories that there's no real way to umbrella them culturally. And so Texas, I feel like their economy is, it's crazy good. Like, I was just in Dallas. There's just skyscrapers going up everywhere. It's like all these corporations are moving to Texas because they have no state tax. And, you know, Toyota is now out of Texas and all these other places. And they're basically just like, yeah, whatever you guys want to do, man, we're out. And I like people like that. I like people that rest on their own strength, because usually it allows them to be better friends. That they don't need you. All right, so let's go through some relationship stuff. And I'm at the piano because I've always done a lot of songs with relationships, and I want to kind of go through stuff. And you, if you've been a fan of mine for a while, you probably know some of these. And it's interesting because different stages in your life, you do different jokes for like what you're going through. And like, okay, the first song I ever did, this is a little information about the Big Bear that you didn't hear, like that on the last What Say You podcast. I just did the Impractical Jokers podcast where I revealed some things. When I first wrote this song, I was a virgin. Huh? And I had watched a lot of pornography because my brother labeled Debbie Does Dallas, he labeled it RoboCop 2 when I was a kid. So I had been exposed to pornography and it kind of blew my mind. And I was a late bloomer with sex. Like women started being interested in me at maybe 16 or 17, but I didn't have the emotional infrastructure to even handle it. I remember once a girl asked me to go to prom and I just said, okay, I'll ask Mark for you. Because I didn't believe that she would ask me. And it got to the point where like one time at a party, a girl jerked me off without even kissing each other because I was like immobile. And I was always a sexual person, very, very high sex drive. But I just had a block for some reason with women. And then my freshman year in college was the first time I ever had sex. And then I was off to the races for a while. But when I wrote this song, I was still a virgin, which that makes me laugh. But it was a love song to Jenna Jameson, who is a porn star. She's now a conservative pundit. A lot of respect. She just followed me on Instagram or on Twitter, which I think is pretty great. But it's not mocking her or mocking anything. It's mocking the concept of porn, looking back. Because I was self-aware enough to know what it was. That it was a false connection. Like the first time Adam Sandler saw me do stand-up when he put me in a movie, the joke he always liked was, I was like, yeah, whenever I have a one-night stand, and the girl's like, what do you want to do for breakfast? I'm like, what do you want to do for Christmas? Because I always had that side of me that lusted connection. But at the same time, I'm just a horny guy with balls full of cum. And that's funny because it's an irony. It's like when you have a really good heart, but it's just full of cum. And this song became very popular in my college because I performed it in college. And the first set I ever did was opening for Kevin Hart in a cafeteria. And no one knew who he was or I was. And we were pretty much on the same level. It's so interesting, man. It's a long life. And he was very nice. And I support that guy. But anyway, this is the Jenna Jameson song. It goes, Jenna Jameson, I love you, baby. You're always there. You're just waiting for me in my VCR. Girl, I know you care. I can fast forward you if I want to, but when I see a great shot, I'll hit pause. You don't know what you give to me, Jenna. You're my porn star Santa Claus. Your titties take away all my pain. An Anorama 27, I could tell your face was numb from cocaine. But I would never judge you. Oh no, Jenna, I just kept loving you even more. After we make love, Jenna Jameson, you never snore. Cause I love you like the moon loves the deep blue sea. And every time you're getting plowed doggy style, girl, you're just looking at me. My priest said porno is bad and it's wrong to masturbate. Well, he had a little lover who was about 8, so I never listened to that pedophile. Oh no, I just kept loving you even more. You can be my Aphrodite and I will be your Thor. Okay, so then I do a solo, which I would never do now, but if you could break, if we just break down that song and what I was going through at the time and what I've gotten through, the first line that jumps out at me is the one about my priest said porno was wrong and it's bad to masturbate. Well, he had a little lover who was eight. At that period of my life, I was still going through a real antagonism towards Christianity because I'm from a town that was ravaged by the Catholic priest pedophile problem. And in my adulthood, after a lot of soul searching and having a child of my own, I don't want to rob myself and my family of God and spirituality and, you know, the unbelievable life truth that the Bible has to offer just because of a corrupt group of horrible human beings. And I think that that's a lesson that we can learn for everything. And it's not easy. It's not easy. You know, I have this vicious recoil that happens sometimes when I think about religion because I was in an area where it's almost like now how social justice warriors virtue signal, where they act like all great because they're all part of this little fake thing where they're like, I, for one, am against rape, unlike you. That's how there was a period in my childhood where that's how I viewed Christians. And then as my scope of the world got bigger, I realized that I just had a bad run with them. And that it's just not fair to lump everyone in a category of hypocrisy when my first experience with Christianity was so great with my parents and my godfather, who is a Benedictine monk. And these people are just brilliant in the connection that they had. And that, you know, corruption, the hubris and the corruption of modern scientists doesn't hurt my love of science. And the hypocrisy of the church as a kid will not separate me from spirituality. And I think that I hear that lyric and I remember that vicious feeling I used to have that's gone now. Thank God. And then if you listen to the other lyrics, it's basically like, it's the draw of pornography that people still feel, myself included. It's that there's no human connection. It's like drinking alone. You know, you get drunk, but you're alone. You know, it's like, you're just waiting for me in my VCR. I know you care. There's tragedy in that line. You know, it's like you have control over this love of your life. But she's waiting in a VCR and she doesn't care. She doesn't even know you exist. You know, and then it's your titties take away all my pain. And Anal Rama 27. I remember even back then I knew the comedic device that is, because the fact that there was 26 other Anal Ramas, I don't even know if Anal Rama is a real thing. But you know, I remember like the titles of pornos back then used to be like Big Tit Bingo 19 or something. And you always think there was 26 other ones. You know, there was only at that time, there was only three Star Wars. Like Star Wars, this unbelievable movie. There's only three. But for some reason, they didn't have enough to fully tell the tale of Anal Rama. So they had to do the 27th. I could tell your face was numb from cocaine. Like clearly not in a good place, not in a place to love, but I never judged you. I just kept loving you even more. And after we make love, you never snore. That shows the weakness of me, you know? And, that's something that annoys me a lot of times about male feminists is they never really live a life of a feminist. The life of a male feminist is a husband, someone that knows that the real support you have to give women is when they're snoring and you just stay by their side. Their nipples ache from breastfeeding. They're angry. They're annoyed. They feel fat because they just gave birth. They feel fat because they're about to have their period. Those are the times when you become a male feminist. But that's the feminism that no one ever talks about in the media. They talk about how much money they can make at a job or allowing them to have threesomes with you. Like it's such a joke. It's become such a reversal that it's crazy. So to stay on topic with love, I think that there's a draw to pornography at all times now we have so much of it in our phone or on our computer that it feels like a different game, but it really isn't. People used to treat magazines the same way they treat Pornhub now. The thing is, it removes you from that pure... It removes you from the reality of passion and not getting to see certain things. I think that if you watch too much porn, you'll never really know the hunger and the release of sex. Like how good it can be to, like, when you actually get to see a breast, or like the curve of a woman's hip, or like when you actually get to see that the face she makes when you first are inside of her. Like, these are things that you shouldn't see as you're just in the material world, like it's nothing. And I'm not saying that from a moral high ground. I'm saying that from, like, you don't ever really, it's just like being drunk alone. It's like being drunk alone can be fun, but there's nothing better than being drunk with your brother or your friends or right after you accomplish something, you know? And it's the same with sex. And it's like, you can cocoon yourself with all this pornography, but I'm telling you, if you watch less of it, you will start seeing more sexual beauty in women. And you will, I don't know, I think you're more connected to the real world of it. And I think women have their own forms of pornography. You know, women still watch visual pornography, just not nearly as much as men, because women aren't as visual as men. A lot of times they have these stories, these elaborate and impossible stories of the billionaire killer CEO who only wants one woman and he ravages her and he has all these issues. But, you know, these impossible scenarios, so that your man will never compare to that unless you're with me. I'm just kidding. But, like, I think that those are all separations. All right, let's keep going here. Here's another song. This is later in my sexual life that I wrote. This is called Text Message Love Story. I never knew you liked me. I never thought you cared. I was gonna touch you, but I was scared. I thought that we were just friends. I thought that was the case. Until you texted me a winky face. And I said, ha ha. And you said, he he he. I said, come over and fuck me, ha ha, hee hee. 'Cause the smiley face means you're happy, the frowny means you're sad, blushy face means you're blushing, but the winky face means you're glad to see my wiener. You're just winking at my wiener, yeah. Winky, 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 sucky, 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 fucky, fucky, sucky. That's a classic, but you can see the joke in it. There's so many layers of jokes. Like, that's in the time, that's joking about the time of your life when you're courting women through whatever new technology there is. And I'm making fun of the devices people use so they can be direct without losing any ground. Like the haha and the winky face. You know, you can say anything, and if it goes false, if you're like, come over and have sex with me, ha ha, it's like, oh, and I am your boss. That is not appropriate. I'm like, I was just kidding, ha ha. And everyone knows that. The reason that joke always worked is because everyone's experienced that. When you start texting and you say something more direct than you would say, but if you end it with a ha ha or a winky face, well, no, the ha ha, you say the ha ha after you say something more direct than you would. Come over. That's why I say fuck. Like, I don't just swear for no reason. It's usually because the hyperbolic expression of vulgarity works with the undercurrent of whatever the joke is. If I say, come over and have sex with me, ha ha hee hee, it isn't as much of a comedic pop as come over and fuck me. Because that's, like, direct, it's sexual, and it's vulgar, right? So, like, that is a bigger hot cold. It's a bigger, like, going from intense to haha. than any other thing. You know, like if I'm doing a corporate event or something, I would say, come over and make out with me, ha ha hee hee, and that'll get a laugh. But it's not because it's vulgar that it's getting a laugh. It's because the difference between those two sentences is greater. And the winky face is the opposite. It's anything benign. If you follow it with a winky face, it becomes sexual. Like you could say, how's your day going, winky face? That literally somehow becomes creepy and sexual. Like, I have a car, winky face. It literally sounds like I have a car and a dick. And then the end gets so vulgar because it's like, because it's another juxtaposition is that I sound like an understanding male. Like the smiley face means you're happy. The frowny face means you're sad. The blushy face means you're blushing. So all of a sudden you're establishing a rapport of like, I know you, I feel you, I know what you go through with these emotions. But when you do the winky face, it means you want to see my cock. And that is just a comedic pop. And then at the end, sucky, 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 winky, 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 sucky, winky, fucky, sucky. And then you just start saying gibberish because it's implying that you're actually having sex at that point. So yeah, that's a song, like I don't relate a ton to that now because me and Amy will do like winky face stuff, but it just isn't like something that I drive to mock, but it's funny still. Like that holds up to me in my mind. Here's another one. I wrote this after a breakup. It's like, it's hard right now. I never play this anymore. I should, this is still pretty funny. It's hard right now to look in your eyes. Thought of you sad is enough to make me cry. Even though I'm walking away, I know I love you, but leaving is something I have to do. 'Cause you're a 7 and I deserve an 8. You're a 7, it's pretty good, but it's not great. But I know in my heart that I deserve an 8. All right, so that is, I wrote that after I overheard a girl saying that she just needs to be with someone who makes at least $80,000 a year. And that concept of putting a commodity on your lover, while at the same time saying you're not asking for too much, you know, it's one thing if you say rich, like I need to be with a rich guy or I need to be with a 10. But when you say like, I just need 80 grand a year, that's the equivalent of a guy being like, I deserve an 8. And the fact that she's a 7 means you're so meticulous of the commodity you believe you deserve that like even 1 point isn't enough. You need that 8. And that's that joke. I think it's pretty funny. All right, so another thing, one of my biggest jokes of my career was the soap opera Music Eyes, where I do this music will play randomly in a woman's head, where it's like, I went to Wendy's. Oh, sorry, I was late, I went to Wendy's. And she's like, who the fuck is Wendy? And then this is what's in a man's head from birth until death. I do a fight between a man and a woman in their appropriate soundtracks where it's like, hey baby, how was your day? How was my day? Well, the fact you just asked me that means you didn't check my Instagram account. Because I said I was having a really bad day, but I guess you don't give a shit. Oh, I don't have Wi-Fi. I'm out of data. You're so hot, I want to fuck you so bad. I just said I had a bad day, and the first thing you're going to do is you're going to want to have sex with me? Is that all you want from it? No, I don't want to have sex with you. I want to talk to you. You don't want to have sex with me anymore? What's wrong with me? You think I'm gross? No. I do have sex. I want to have sex with you. I'll have sex with you right now. Oh, so you lied. You lied to me. And I believed you. What the hell else have you lied about? Just tell me what to say and I'll say it. All right, so that joke can't be done in this new progressive dystopia of men and women all being the same, because that, of course, would get articles written that I'm saying women are more neurotic than men and all this stuff. They are. Like, that's a fact. like we are designed differently. Like I set up the bit with a long bit so that everyone's on board. I don't lose anybody with that bit because it's so goddamn true. But about how back in the day, women have higher stakes in a relationship. Like if a woman gets pregnant, she's extremely vulnerable. And anyone who's been through a pregnancy knows that's true. Like they can't hunt for themselves if they're giving birth and they just have a newborn baby. You know, they could die during the pregnancy. They're now attached to this baby. Guys can just pump and bail. And that's why women have this, like, because all the ones that weren't neurotic died. You know what it's like? Will you get us food? And the guy's like, yeah, I'll get you food. And then he, like, chases a woolly mammoth and he forgets shoes and he dies. You know, I do all these scenarios where it's like, yeah, everyone says not to eat these berries, but they're right here, baby. Let's just eat these berries. They're poison berries, dead, dead. And I keep going where it's like the woman who survived was the one who didn't really believe anybody. Who was like, take shoes. Don't eat those berries. Who's that fucking girl? And it's like, why are you being mad at me, Diane? It's like, because I don't want to die. Get the food where I can see you and come home, bitch. And that's true. And so when you try to make it like men and women are different, you're ignoring all of science, all of history, all of our endocrine system. All without these jokes, you can't get through marriage. If you think men and women are the same and you're in a marriage, you will get divorced because you won't be able to like look at each other through the filter of their gender. And there's a range of gender roles. I was talking to Joe Rogan about this on his podcast. I just did the Joe Rogan Experience, which is a blast, but how he would say there's a range of gender. And I said that, no, it's actually gender roles where it's like you can be a man and very effeminate and just bake cookies all day long, but you're still a male. Like you're just operating a different gender role. And you could support a woman who's a CEO of a bank and she comes home and you have all these cookies for her. Of course you can do that. I'm not limiting anybody's thing. I'm just saying the odds of that happening are much lower because of our biological needs. And usually even corporate CEO women and stay-at-home dads, a lot of times they still occupy some of these traits because of their endocrine system. I know that I can be an emotional wreck and Amy can like basically tell me to shut up. That doesn't change our genders. Like I've literally cried watching a movie that and Amy's like not literally looks at me like with compassion. She's like, it's gonna be okay, baby. You know, it's just Fern Gully, whatever the hell it is. Where did I cry at recently? Oh, A Monster Calls. I cried at that movie. I don't cry much in life, but I cry during movies. It was when Liam Neeson, that was that big tree. And he's like, tell me the truth. Tell me the truth. I just am bawling. Because that's the hardest thing you can do in the world is just say your truth because you know that it's so scary. Anyway. These things are still real. And if you don't acknowledge that men and women have different needs and different tendencies, you won't get through a marriage. Because then I do one about men, about how women, because men and women both have a genetic predisposition to like checking out members of the opposite sex. It's just a much different amount of people and like who they are. Like when a woman... Like women will have crushes, but they're like celebrity crushes. They're usually men that make more money than them and are more powerful than them. That's why even Beyonce married Jay-Z. Hillary Clinton still married Bill Clinton. Like even these alpha females typically marry up, which is very hard for them to find someone above them. Like the amount of people Beyonce could marry is like 9 people. Like if you make $300 million a year, you need a guy to make $301 million a year. And Jay-Z does make more than her. So like Hillary Clinton, if you're like a political powerhouse, ambitious lawyer, you need one that is slightly more. Because that's just how they function, typically. And so women will have these crushes on like, you know, Magic Mike or somebody in one of their novels. It's just not a lot of dudes. Like you could take your chick to a party and... if you're doing well in your relationship, like she feels safe and loved and happy, she's not just checking out dudes' dicks and balls. Because A, men aren't as attractive as women. And I can say that even though I'm a heterosexual man, it's true. It just is. Like even an average woman is hotter than an above average man, even accounting for subjective. And because for most of human existence, women, you're related to twice as many women as men. Most men didn't get a chance to procreate. And that's a concept a lot of people have a hard time wrapping their brains around, because they're like, how do you have one without the other? Like, the average woman would have two children and the average man would have one. And if you think about that, that's profound, because women are just inherently more valuable when it comes to procreation. So that's why men would take higher risks, because they have to stand out from the herd. Like, the male body is less attractive than the female body because it can't make life. And that's why I do that bit about eggs versus cum, about what's more valuable economically. You know, like, you get $75 to sell all the jizz in your balls. And that's why when your girl's about to get her period, she gets irritable because she's about to lose $6,000. Like, every egg is worth $6,000, but all our jizz is $75. And these are all, like, very profound things that affect our personality. So it's like, men aren't as attractive as women. You know, the alpha male is very attractive to a lot of women because he represents safety. It's not that they just, like, when they're ovulating, they may have this drive to just get pounded by a guy with huge muscles and a big jaw because they want their offspring to have strong characteristics. But in general, they need safety because the process of becoming a mother is incredibly vulnerable. And so that's why men will just kind of look at women, not disrespectfully. Like, it's not like, because one reason I can do this joke is because I've genuinely grown out of this. And, like, I'm a red-blooded man. You know, I will still see 0.7 hip-to-waist ratio and do that. But, like, it's so not a problem for me that I feel so comfortable doing jokes about this, because I think it can relieve so much stress in a relationship. And I do this long joke about, because that's why women get so upset at that, because they feel like if you're doing what they would be feeling when they're doing this, there's a problem in the relationship. When in fact, you're not comparing the same thing. Like, if a woman is constantly checking out all her coworkers and all the guys she's around and all that stuff, it means that there's a break in her relationship. You know, if she's around Ryan Reynolds or whatever, or you know, one of these ultra alphas, she'll check him out and stuff, but that's just in her nature and you can't really be affected by that. You know, if she wants to go to a Coldplay concert and I fuck Chris Martin for 2 hours, let her do that. It's kind of like their porn, you know? But if she's just looking around at, like, normal dudes, she would feel like there's something wrong. So when I do a bit about how women have, like, a scope, like that guy, men had just have an Uzi, just throwing jizz in the field, right? And so I do a song called How It Feels For Us. And I swear to God, this makes, like, women relieved. It sounds like what I'm doing is going to stress women out. It doesn't. It makes them realize that, like, this isn't genuine desire from men. When men, like, do all that, you know, it's literally an animal impulse, almost like looking at fruit in a jungle. And so I do this song. It's called How It Feels For Us. It goes, hey ladies, you know that feeling when you see a bag at the mall and you want it, even though you already have one, you're literally holding one in your hand. It does the same thing as your current bag. It holds your cell phone and your wallet and your other shit. And you have, like, five at home that you never even use. But you also kind of want that one too. All right, at this point, half the women are on board. But I set that up on purpose. I do the bag thing because that's, like, half women can relate to that. This is when I'm jabbing right now, and this is the right hook of relatability. And I go, when you're at the shoe store, and you're like, I like those shoes, and I'm like, you're fucking wearing the same shoes, Now I got all of them. And you're like, I know, but I also want to know what it's like to be inside of those two. That's how men feel about pussy. And that's a callback to another joke. So what that does is it offers so much release to couples, because it's like, oh, that's it? And when they see the purity of the male laughter, they know that's it. And they know, and then if I ever need to, which I rarely do, because I don't do that joke if it's all young people. Not young. When I say young, I mean single. Like if it's all like college, if it's college kids or something, I don't touch that joke. That joke is more when like more than half the crowd is married. Like more than half the crowd has been through a position where you have to face your instincts every day and be in a monogamous and happy and fulfilling relationship. That's who that's for. And if they, like before I had all the beats down and I was still working on it, crowds would turn on me. Like before I had the right order, like if I started with shoes or like I didn't act it out, you're fucking wearing the same shoes. Because that, like, at that point, women know it's crazy that they're going to buy these crazy expensive things, even though they literally already have the same shoes. And then I, like, if they turn on me at the end, I have like that record scratch moment where I go, the number one cause of divorce is money problems, not infidelity. Overspending will cause more divorce than affairs. And that's a fact. So the materialism of women, and yes, there's more materialism in women. There just is. Women have way more buying power in capitalist society. That's why people are always trying to appeal to women. Causes more divorce. If you buy 5 handbags and you have a giant credit card bill, that will cause more friction and problems in your relationship than an affair that probably won't even happen. Because you also have to understand, you have to have, like, chicks have to fuck these guys. And a lot of guys can't get ass. Like, there's a lot of guys that feel so high and mighty that they, like, they're like, I have just never looked at anything and done anything. It's because no one fucks them. It's like no one wants to fuck those guys. It's so much more of a accomplishment if you're like a guy that women want and you stay faithful. It's the equivalent of like if you're a wealthy woman and you stay frugal. Like you don't buy Charlie Choo's or whatever the fuck that guy's name is. Jimmy Choo's shoes. Like if you get like pay less shoes and you're a woman and you're worth $50 million, that's the equivalent of like a man, like women wanting men and him not letting them jerk him off. And I think that there's a moral breach that happens with infidelity that doesn't happen with overspending. Like, I know that that sounds a little cold, and it is. I think that if you're actually inside of another human being, that can cause some real damage than just like the innocence of overspending. I'm totally aware of that. But at the same time, if you look at the math of it, like so many divorces are caused by fights about money. And if you have like this hard materialism, that's really bad for marriages. And another interesting psychological fact is men are more jealous of female physical infidelity than emotional infidelity. And women are more jealous of emotional infidelity than physical infidelity. And that makes perfect evolutionary sense. That if a man puts his cock in your wife, you see red, because he may have gotten your wife pregnant and now you are going to sacrifice resources for another man's genetics, right? If a man and your wife are just like buddies, fine. That's like one thing to take. That's one thing that you don't have to do. Like if I'm on the road and my wife has my brother or somebody that she can just like have dinner with and feel happy, that's a huge plus for me because that keeps her happy. Why would I not want that? And for women, their biggest threat is if their man falls in love with another woman. So if their man is very close to another woman, they're more threatened by that than if he throws his cock at another woman. They're both threatening to a woman, but genetically, her instincts, just a man throwing a cock in a woman and not having anything come from that does not threaten her like another woman taking her man away, because that's her source of protection and resources when she's vulnerable. So if he throws his cock around and still comes home, that's better for her than the other way. Granted, women have higher stakes both directions, so she's going to be upset either way, but she's more upset if you're like texting and smiling and being happy with a girl, and she feels like a girl's giving you fulfillment that she isn't giving you. That will weigh on her way more than you just let someone jerk you off, like in a field. You know what I'm saying? All right. So if you want to donate to my next special, hugepianist.com, every bit helps. $10 up to $1 billion. I'm just kidding. Don't give me $1 billion. But yeah, it's kind of like that my new friend William in Scotland pretty much paid for my newest special that's coming out. He won the lottery and gave me literally 10 grand to shoot this special, which I will be forever in his debt because he did it for nothing. He didn't even want anything from it. And it's unbelievable that he did that. I've been paid way more money by people to have my stuff not come out. I've been paid a lot of money to write a script just to bury the script. So this to me is such an honor, and it's a world I want to live in. So yeah, hugepianist.com, because I'm pretty cash poor right now because I had to pay for this special because it went a little over what, you know, the donations. And then all the flights, like I just did Adam Carolla and Rogan, and it's like, you know, I'm not getting paid for this shit. I would pay anything to do Rogan and Carolla because I'm such fans. But like when I'm flying around the country, and then I had to rent out a lot of these theaters in England, and then pay for the flights and the hotels, and I got an opener. You know, I'm not a wealthy guy, so all this like Patreon stuff is great and very helpful, and because, you know, life's good, and I like to be free. I like to be not free of work, not free of commitment, or not free of any of that, but free of like having to say nonsense. Like men and women are the same. Give me a Netflix special. I'm a liar. It's like, I can't do that because it isn't true. And everything I just did, you know, is true. You know this is all true. You know that this is how men and women feel. So when people say that gender is a choice, it's an emotion, it's a lie. And everyone who goes along with that is complicit in the denigration and destruction of every family that thinks that, like, the man and the woman view the world the same way, and that all of their fights are because of personality differences. All marriages, any good marriage has fights, breakdowns, complete meltdowns, complete, you know, if you're just dating someone, no, you can go a long time without having massive arguments. But like when you're in it, and even if, like, I love Amy more than I love anything in the world. Amy and Walter, my son, I would do anything. If someone said, chop off your hand right now for your wife and child, I wouldn't think, well, no, I would assess whether or not they would keep their word. But I would do anything for them. So, like, you have to understand, even in the most loving, and, like, me and Amy have a great sex life. We laugh together all the time. My son is healthy. I'm so blessed that he's healthy. And he's a good kid. And, you know, my brother's down the street. And we have a wonderful, safe environment, right? I have all this stuff. But even in all of that, we still get in fights. Like, bad ones. And so I want people to know that, like, that's part of it. And, like, don't give up. Like, there was times when me and Amy were just dating when we probably should have broken up. And I think about those moments and how Walter almost didn't exist. And I look back at me and all the mistakes I made and all the mistakes she made. And I that's what brought me closer to believing in God again, is I literally pray and I thank whoever kept me through that. Because there was moments when, like, there's no way we should have made it through. Like, just epic, disastrous elements of our relationship that we weathered, we learn from, and we're fine. And, like, Walter wouldn't be on this planet if we had thrown in the towel, if we had said, that's it. And I'm not just saying to stay, don't stay in abusive relationships, but like, there's just an instinct that we have that even when it gets dark, something says, this is still, I love this person. And I think it's easy to just, as long as you know you're physically not in danger, you know, I've punched doors and shit. I'm not going to lie. I've done some serious yelling. She's kicked the shit out of me before. I've been in a position where I feel like, I feel so sorry that I was trying to like intimidate her with like yelling, like loud yelling, because she's half Mexican. So she would just get right in my face and be like, bitch, what, you know? And I'd be like, ah, you know. But there's a difference between cruelty and wanting to establish dominance in a really bad way. Like, we've both learned not to posture like that, like gorillas. There's a type of person that's cruel and they're sadistic and they want you to hurt because they hurt. Always stay away from those people. But there's also a lot of people, most people, that are feel weak or vulnerable, or they have to overcompensate, or they make a mistake and they yell, or they fight, or they break something. Or like one time I broke one of those things you put fruit in. And then this is years ago. And we joked, like, that's the thing. That's why comedy is so fucking important. Like, we joked about it, where later she goes, we're having an argument, and she goes, Owen, if you're going to break the fruit thing, can you take the fruit out first? And it just broke the tension. We just started laughing. And it's moments like that. It's moments when you accept each other's nature, that I'm a warrior type human. Like, when I'm confronted by things, I fight those things when I know they're wrong. Like, I stand up for myself and my people. It's in my blood. Some people aren't like that. God bless them too. Everyone needs farmers. Everyone needs engineers. Everyone needs warriors. It's just certain personality types. And Amy is also a warrior. So it's like, we easily could have broken up. We could have went to war. And we didn't. We always came back to the heart. And I like can't believe I got what I got. And so much of it comes from comedy and honesty and just pure transparency. Like, me and her know the darkest shit about each other. Like, I'm writing that book. I mean, the first draft's done, but these drafts take so long when you're like working with a publisher. But like, there's such a relief. Where like she knows as dark, like she knows me. She knows my demons, my angels, and she still loves me. And she like thinks I'm kind. She thinks I'm good and nice. And she's seen me at my worst. And the same with her. Like, I will sacrifice nights of sleep and physical pain just to see her for an hour. Like when I'm doing shows in the city, I'll drive 5 hours to have lunch with her. Like, it's like we're truly in love. And we almost could have lost it all. And so that's why sometimes when I see people break up and I see this culture of like avoiding the absolute reality of gender and sexuality and human nature, there's a lot of kids out there that aren't going to be made. There's a lot of kids out there that are going to be in a divorced family. There's a lot of confused kids out there that don't know that their feelings don't make them evil. And that you don't know, you can't be good unless you know how bad you can be. Like, that whole thing is me acknowledging that I've looked at other girls' asses. That alone, 90% of people won't say, but of course it's true. I've seen my wife check out dudes before. Rare, but I've seen it. Or like, for her, it's more like if she hears about the perfect wedding or some shit. It's like I can almost see her get horny. But I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just saying that like, for me being a free speech zealot and to identify more on the right these days than on the left is not out of hate. It's not out of greed. In fact, it's out of a deep desire to not let these simple truths go to shit. And when I'm looking at my show and realizing that it would now be considered hate speech by such brilliant academics as Lena Dunham, Bill Nye, and fucking NewYorkTimes.net or whatever the fuck these people are, it's crazy. It's crazy that these aren't just known as truth. And that, like, you're allowed to say your truth, or else your beautiful kid won't be born. If I didn't have Walter and Amy, I'm fucked. I'm at the bottom of a bottle, just trying to get blown by strangers off highways. Literally. I wouldn't have known, because it's... me now is a different person. I'm not a different person. I wouldn't have known this existed then. Because my parents aren't into, like, ritual and shit like that. Like, when I was first with Amy, I sucked at Christmas. You know, I sucked at birthdays. I almost ignored them. And it caused her, you know, she was always pissed about it. Like, we go to her families and, you know, they all sit around and, you know, they have their, like, New Year's Eve pajamas and everybody has a present. They sit around and light a goddamn candle or something. And I'm like, I could be working right now. Why am I doing this? And it's because I was raised without that. I didn't know how good that... I was raised with Christmas, but my parents are so pragmatic. They're so Northern European, like Scandinavian type, Germanic, little Czech Jew in there. It's like, it's so like, don't come home for Christmas, come home in April, it's cheaper. Like, that's how my parents are. So I didn't know how great holidays were and birthdays were until she showed me. I didn't know how great family was until she showed me. I didn't know that, like, that life is the most precious thing in the world until Walter showed me. Just like, his little fragile head contains the most beautiful thing in the world to me. And before, I never would have known that. And so I would have just been on this hedonic treadmill forever. Like, this Ponzi scheme, this financial, sexual, and emotional Ponzi scheme.